It's All About Food with Karen Hartglass, Wednesdays at 3 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Karen Hartglass, your host today on It's All About Food. Thanks for joining me. And we talk about food for an hour. It's my favorite subject. And there's so many things that are related to food and the choices we make, usually three times a day, as to what we put on our plates and put in our mouths to feed and nourish us. I like to discuss all of the impacts that our food choices have, not only on our personal health, the health of our families, but also the health of the planet and all life on Earth. And it's the holiday season. People are, I know, getting more and more overwhelmed about the parties and the food and the gifts. And it's, let's not forget the meaning of some of these events. We just had Thanksgiving, and it's so important during this time to really realize what we're thankful for and where our food comes from and how we participate in the well-being of our planet. So, I'm in New York City right now, and we're going through this dreadful storm. Someone just said it was a monsoon. I'm not quite sure what people are calling it, but it's wet, it's gray, it's windy. And more people are talking about how we are having a tremendous impact on the well-being of the planet, which affects the weather. And so we're seeing more turbulent weather, more hurricanes, tsunamis, and tornadoes, and crazy weather here in New York City. And maybe we should be prepared. Now, I don't like to put out reasons to worry, but you know, there's nothing wrong with being prepared in case of emergencies. And I think my guest today, in addition to talking about lots of delicious food, might have some tips about what we might want to do to be prepared in different situations. And I'm going to be talking with Robin Robertson. She's a food writer, and listen to this, she's an author of 19 cookbooks. She has worked with food for over 25 years as a restaurant chef, caterer, and cooking teacher. She's a regular columnist for Veg News magazine and has also written for Vegetarian Times, Cooking Light, Better Nutrition, and Health Naturally, among many others. We're going to be talking about a bunch of her cookbooks today. Vegan Planet, Vegan Fire and Spice, 1,000 Vegan Recipes, Vegan on the Cheap, and Party Vegan. She also developed recipes for Vegan Unplugged, a pantry cookbook and emergency preparedness guide she co-wrote with her husband, John Robertson. Excuse me. Please welcome Robin Robertson. Hello, Robin.
Hey, Karen. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
So I'm just blown away at how amazing you are with 19 cookbooks under your belt. And not only are there 19, but it's like you put out a billion of them every year.
It only seems that way.
It's not like one every now and then. You've got three books that came out in 2010.
Right. I'm a workaholic.
Okay, so that's the explanation.
Yeah.
Well, that's amazing because especially when it comes to the vegan diet, I really believe in flooding the market with information. And so thank you for doing your part.
Sure.
So you've got three books that came out this year, Vegan on the Cheap, Party Vegan, and Vegan Unplugged.
That's right. And they couldn't be more diverse, but I think they're three of the most necessary books people could want for different reasons.
Well, let's talk about Vegan Unplugged.
Okay.
So,
well,
yeah.
It came out of the, my husband and I used to live in Virginia Beach, right on the coast, and we experienced a few too many hurricanes where we just weren't prepared and the power went out. And you know, most people can handle a day or two without power, but when it starts going on 3, 4, 5 days with no power and over a week, you start, you know, peanut butter crackers start to get old, you know. And, you know, I don't know if you've ever been without power, you know, the first couple days you can use up what's in the refrigerator, and in fact, you need to because it goes bad after a couple days. But if you're caught, you know, with an empty refrigerator and it's going on, you really need to think about, you know, what to do, because if you have no power, then chances are the restaurant down the street won't have power.
That's
and
right.
The supermarket will be closed. And so it's suddenly a whole different scenario. And that's why we wrote the book, because we realized, especially for vegans, there really aren't that many options. Most of the emergency preparedness information you can get, like from FEMA or whatever, they're geared towards people who eat meat and dairy.
Mm-hmm. They tell you to stock up on a lot of spam.
Yeah, exactly. I saw one report that said 52 cans of spam.
Oh, please.
Yeah, really. I mean, I think even meat eaters wouldn't want to do that. So our goal was to, number one, prepare a book that would be like a survival guide on how to put things away and just to have things stocked up, because we've been through it so many times, and we just simplified it for people, because there's all kind of, as you were mentioning, all kind of weather-related things and other kinds of reasons why people would not be able to cook with fresh food. And I developed the 80 recipes in the book to not only be, if you're without power, without a refrigerator, without a stove, but also to be variable, like for when you're plugged in and when you're unplugged. So in other words, if you're using up some leftover fresh vegetables, that's great. You can plug them into the recipe, and if you don't have it, then I have other options like dehydrated vegetables, or you know, certain canned products, or other shelf stable products. So it's a wide variety of recipes to get you through any situation.
Now, I haven't seen the book, but I want to, and so I don't know what's in it. But are there foods in there that you use on a regular basis?
Oh, yes. It's mainly based on my typical pantry ingredients, and I have all kinds of pasta and grain dishes, bean and vegetable dishes, salads, soups, desserts, and snacks, and it's just based on non-perishables. I basically gave myself the criteria that the dishes had to be ready in 15 minutes or less, and I could only use ingredients that don't need to be refrigerated or frozen. And if I want to cook them, they have to be able to cook within 15 minutes on a butane single burner stove.
Right.
So that's what I use for cooking, because I have it anyway for cooking demos, and they're really cheap, and they take up little space. You can get a whole case of little canisters of butane, and they're safe for indoors. So that's what I recommend for anybody that wants to have an emergency way to cook food.
Right. Okay. So the butane, and there's a butane stove that must go with that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But of course, you know, if you just don't feel like cooking someday, and you just haven't gone to the grocery store, and you just want to put something together, these recipes are also great just for, you know, whatever reason. They're good for camping. They're good for people going boating. They're good for just people that don't like to cook. Like if I'm not in the mood to cook, my husband can throw these recipes together. That's how easy and quick they are, and they don't have to have any special ingredients. It's just you know, easy pantry stuff, like an almost instant black bean chili and Old Bay chickpea cakes, and I make puttanesca in a pinch, that kind of thing. Very, very simple. And I've come up with, like, just interesting, like, samosa dias. I make them with, you know, just I either use dehydrated potatoes or a can of white potatoes, but I use a lot of really flavorful things like curry powder and some raisins and canned green chilies and curry powder and that kind of thing, and then mash it all together and put it in tortillas and serve, you know, just kind of put them in a skillet for a few minutes and then cut them, and you have little mini kind of samosa-flavored things, and serve it with chutney.
Yum.
Really good. Makes a quick, easy lunch. You can, and there again, that's another reason you can adapt this for when you have refrigerated foods. If you have some leftover mashed potatoes or roasted potatoes, some leftover vegetables, you know, you basically just plug that into the recipe, add the spices, and take the idea, you know, take it to that next level using up whatever you have on hand.
I talk about being mindful a lot. And it applies to everything in life, where we really should be paying attention to everything around us and what we're doing and why we're doing it and look for the details. But I know a lot of people get overwhelmed in the kitchen, and I'm always encouraging people to get to discover their kitchen, find it, and use it. But what really helps is to be organized. And some people struggle with organization, and so it's great to have books like yours that kind of make it clear, give people an idea of what it is they need, not just for emergencies, but just for daily life. And I think one would support the other. So on a regular basis, people could be shopping and stocking their pantry with healthy food that makes life easy or makes preparing things easy. And the thing is to just think about what it is that you need to have. And you just mentioned a few of them, but something that really helps is having a good variety of spices, herbs and spices. And I'm not sure, about quite sure where you are. You're in Virginia, right?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah, so I'm in New York City, so we have access to everything. And there are some wonderful ethnic markets, Indian markets, where they sell huge bags of herbs and spices for like nothing. And I like to put them in big jars, and then I have all these different mixes of spices, and you don't have to think. You can just take a bunch of vegetables and sprinkle it with one set of spices, a garam masala or something, and wow, it's got great flavor.
Exactly.
And it's all about just thinking ahead of time, being mindful, preparing your kitchen, and things aren't so complicated.
Right, I do. I think a well-stocked pantry is half the battle to, you know, saying, oh, there's nothing to eat. I'm going to just, you know, eat something that's not good for me, or I'm going to go out to eat or order takeout. I mean, if you can put something easy together in 10 or 15 minutes, that's faster than ordering takeout.
Mm-hmm. That's right. It is faster. It's faster, it's less expensive, and it's probably not overloaded with our favorite ingredients, sugar, fat, and salt.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And the quality of the ingredients you're buying and using are probably better than you'll find in most restaurants. So it's just
right.
A win-win-win-win-win-win-win-win-win.
Exactly.
Are there any things in that you suggest that would be surprising to people to have on hand?
Well, what we did was we actually came up with what we call a five-day meal box.
Mm.
And what we figured out is we got a little kind of like a Rubbermaid container that would fit easily in the bottom of a closet. And we filled it up. I developed a menu for 5 days, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And then we went grocery shopping, and they're all ingredients that are available at a typical supermarket. You don't need anything fancy. And then we filled this box. And what it does is it has, you know, the complete grocery list filled out, the complete menu, and it's just a sample of if you can just get all these things in the house, you would be able to feed a family of four for 5 days out of this one box.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people would find that just interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, other than just having good food and ingredients, I think it's just super important to make sure you have that little butane burner on hand and lots of water. And that kind of thing, it's just so important to make plans. I mean, you know, we'd never expect to be without power or to be without this, but you never know.
You never know.
You just never know what's going to happen. And it is. It's like a little kind of a culinary insurance policy. You know, you don't want to have to just live on a plain can of beans or, you know, just have peanut butter crackers. You want to be able to eat well.
Well, I encourage everyone to eat plant foods and not meat, animal-based food, but I think even for meat eaters, this sort of plan sounds a whole lot more appetizing than how many cans of Spam?
Yeah, yeah, 52 cans of Spam. That'll get you through a year.
Oh, gosh. Maybe it may not. It may give you a heart attack sooner than you expected. Okay. So that's Vegan Unplugged. Really an interesting concept, and I definitely want to check it out. So while we're talking, I want to mention you've got two great websites, and one is your new website, globalvegankitchen.com.
Yes.
And it's really a wonderful site. Everything is there. Everything that anyone could ever need to know, or should know, in my opinion, is there. So you can learn about health, environment, treatment of animals, and all the reasons why we choose the food choices we do. You can see all the wonderful cookbooks that you've written, and there are wonderful sample recipes from some of the different books. It's a really lovely, lovely site.
Well, thank you.
And then you have a blog.
Oh, I sure do.
veganplanet.blogspot.com. And this is fun, too, especially, you know, if you're looking for inspiration. There's lots of luscious pictures and inspiration here. So I wanted to talk a little bit about Thanksgiving.
Ah, okay.
Now, I don't know. Is it me? Somehow I feel like the vegetarian community wants to claim Thanksgiving as our holiday. It just seems like so important to the vegans and vegetarians I know.
Yeah, it is. And I think that's because it's the singular most food-based, family-oriented holiday. It's the one time when vegans are thrust together at the same table with non-vegans. It's when a dead bird is the centerpiece of the table. You know, other holidays, you can come in and go out. You can, you know, it's about visiting or getting together. You can, you know, do different things, open gifts or talk to people or have a drink. But Thanksgiving, it's all about the food. Totally.
Yeah, all the issues are on the table.
Yeah, all
so
the
to
issues.
Speak.
That's right on the table. And you know, and a lot of times, you know, you don't see all these family members until this holiday, and especially for new vegans, it might be the first time they're getting together with their family after going vegan. It's always hot button issues.
Yeah,
because it's, you know, it's like the traditional family with their traditions and their, you know, we have to have turkey and we have to do this, and then the vegans come in and like you know, they. People don't understand how to take it. You know, I think there's resentment issues. There's guilt issues. I mean, there's just a lot of issues.
Yeah,
so I think
that I never realized. I knew the holiday was very important, but you just hit it.
Yeah, it's because of the food being the center of it, because there's just no getting away from that and the whole turkey thing. And, yeah, it was very, very traumatic for me, too, when I first made that transition with families. It's like they just really didn't get it. It was like, oh, well, then just eat a little bit of turkey. It's like, what? You know? And, you know, I would quietly try to just bring our own portions of seitan and that kind of thing and just try to put it on our plate and try to eat with the family and not make issues out of it. But there'd always be the relatives that would say, what's that stuff? What are you eating? You know, and then, of course, that would be the conversation for the whole meal.
Yeah, whether you'd wanted to or not, they can't help but talk about it, which always suggests to me that it's not just curiosity. There's something deep within all of us that knows that killing animals is not really a good thing.
I think so, and that's why there's so many different reactions, but, you know, you're always going to get a reaction.
So I know Thanksgiving is over, but it we still have some leftovers, and I still like talking about it because it is my favorite holiday, and it's one of the few times I really indulge with all my favorite comfort foods. So you put up a great recipe, Fun with Thanksgiving Leftovers, where I love what you did. You have two different things, and one is where you wrapped things in yuba.
Uh-huh.
Which I love, this bean curd skin.
Bean curd skin, yeah.
So
great.
Delicious. Now, my question is, where do you get it in Virginia?
I have to drive to Centerville, Virginia, which is outside of Washington. It's about an hour drive for me. There's a wonderful Asian market. It's a huge Asian market, and that's where I get it.
Mm-hmm.
And I stuck up. My freezer's full of it.
I
don't want to be without
right.
it.
Well, for people that don't know what it is, do you want to explain it? What you
well,
it is?
It's kind of hard to explain. It is. It's bean curd skin. It's kind of. I think it's when they're making soy milk and they like. It's a skim off the top of the big pot.
Right, like when people heat milk, cow's milk.
Yeah.
There's a skin that, which you know, most people think is ew, that's disgusting. But but it actually makes an interesting product when it's from soy, and it's a skin that could be comparable to a meat skin. It's thin and chewy and great to wrap things in.
Right, and it gets very crispy and brown and delicious. And I often wrap my seitan roulades for holiday meals, and it's just like this big, beautiful roast, and I cut nice slices out of it. But lately I've also been using it for little rolls, and it's kind of fun because it makes like little egg roll type shapes. But it's good for people who are gluten sensitive because it's...
I'm glad you brought that up because more and more I'm trying to work the wheat and the gluten out of my life for two reasons. One is my niece was diagnosed with celiac disease about a year and a half ago, and she's just she's five, so that's really challenging for her. And I've been noticing, I think it's been going on for a long time, but I really think wheat gives me headaches. So I'm still going to eat wheat from time to time because there's just too many great things that I can make with it. But I love the alternatives, and this is brilliant, using the yuba for little veggie rolls.
Yeah, well, I've used it for a lot of things, but I just thought, wow, how much fun it would be to do a Thanksgiving roll, kind of like an autumn roll. And so, yeah, I put a strip of sweet potato and some green beans and some of the leftover stuffing and the seitan and rolled it up and fried them and then baked them in the oven for a while to get them nice and crispy and hot. And then with my leftover cranberry sauce, I put a little bit of ginger and soy sauce and sriracha and made this incredible dipping sauce.
Mm.
And they were really good. It was like you don't think you're eating Thanksgiving leftovers, that's for sure.
Well, you don't have to convince me that it was good, but when you've made good food for Thanksgiving, the leftovers are still going to taste good.
Oh, yeah.
Now, the other one I just wanted to mention, just because it's just so beautiful and creative, is the Leaning Tower of Thanksgiving.
Oh, yeah.
This is a gorgeous photo, and people really need to go to veganplanet.blogspot.com and just check this out because it's really, really lovely, and all the favorites are stacked here, and I'm looking at, well, what's obvious is sweet potato and mashed potatoes. What else is in this stack?
Well, the very bottom layer is my chestnut stuffing.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Stuffing.
And then in between the mashed potato and the sweet potato is a slice of seitan, which is wheat meat. And then up at the top is some of my green bean casserole with fried onion rings.
Oh, I see. Right.
And it's all vegan. And then the sauce is, I had my brown gravy that I had for Thanksgiving, but I've added some port wine to it and some of the cranberries from the cranberry sauce. So it's a cranberry port wine sauce.
Really good. I'm saying to myself, you should write a cookbook, but wait a minute.
What an idea.
Okay, let's back up a little bit. You, how long have you been doing this vegetarian thing?
More than 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a long time.
Good for you.
Yeah.
And you were in the restaurant business. Now, were you doing vegetarian food when you were in the restaurant business?
No, I wasn't. I was a mainstream chef in first in Pennsylvania, where I grew up, and then I moved down to Charleston, South Carolina in the very early 80s to be a chef down in the... I worked in a seafood restaurant and a French restaurant and a couple other places, a catering company down there. So it was all mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was in the late 80s, I just, you know, it was always kind of like an ethical vegan in my heart, but I was cooking meat for all these people, and I just felt like a hypocrite. I finally just had enough of it, and I quit the restaurant business, and I totally, just like overnight, went vegan.
Oh, I see. So you were,
yeah.
It was like marinating inside you.
Yeah, it was. It was there. I had tried it once when I was a teenager, and I just couldn't, you know, manage it. There were no ingredients at the time or no support system, and it was just too hard. So it was something always brewing there. I really wanted to do it. I loved animals, and I just didn't want to eat them. And, you know, and it was just kind of weird to make your living cooking them. So I just had enough. I had to quit. And then I never looked back. It was wonderful. But, you know, I have to say that I don't regret the experience I had working in restaurants and all that training, because that's what I base my cookbooks on, is what I know from learning classical techniques and cuisines. And it really helped me to give a lot of flavor to the plant-based ingredients I work with.
Well, absolutely. There's always good.
Yeah.
There's always a good side to everything.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
We're certainly benefiting from that. From your skills in that industry, bringing it all together in this more compassionate, nutritious, healthier place, this vegan planet that we want to live in.
Exactly.
And your husband, too, he supports this.
Oh, of course, yes. He was always a big fan of my cooking, and he loves animals, too. And when it came time to say, John, we're going vegan, he said, hey, as long as it tastes good, I'll eat it. And he's never looked back either. He loves it.
Yeah,
and,
there's a lot of guys that say that. As long as it tastes good, I can do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, coming from the restaurant business, I don't know if there are many restaurants where you are that are vegetarian, but do you have any vegan restaurant favorites around the country?
Well, around the country, yeah. In my immediate area, there are, like, no restaurants.
Yeah.
So we eat home. Like, John says, this is the best vegan restaurant for miles right at our house. So we save a lot of money eating in all the time. But when I do get to go out, yes, I love Millennium in San Francisco, and I love Candle Cafe in New York, and I used to really love, I don't know if they're still open, I used to go to Zen Palette in New York a lot.
Yeah, I think they have a few, but they've gone through some difficult times.
Anytime I have an opportunity, I do try to find someplace wonderful to try new things.
Do you have any thoughts about opening a restaurant?
No.
You kind of burned that out of
I
you.
I burnt out. I burnt out of that, and I don't ever want to do that.
Now, you have cats at home?
Oh, yeah.
And I hope you don't mind me asking, but do you feed them regular cat food?
Yeah, I do. I've tried. Unfortunately, they're unrepentant carnivores.
Mm-hmm.
They really are. I've tried vegan food on them, and they look at me like I'm crazy. And I keep trying, and every once in a while, you know, I try. But I love them anyway, you know.
Sure.
It's kind of.
Well, my understanding with cats, it's particularly hard, especially if they're not kittens or from birth, if you start them that way.
I rescued them when they were both adults, and the other one adopted us. He came to the house. So the three of them, they're very much into their carnivorous affinities, I'm afraid.
Well, yeah, that's okay.
Yeah.
It's more than okay. You know, what I am continually talking about is factory farming. And this horrific thing that humanity has created, where we confine animals and they live in their excrement and filth. They're tortured from birth till death. Their lives are much shorter than they would be in a natural environment. And then we slaughter them and package them and eat them. This is the big picture. This is the big problem. And this is something we have to do without. But I wanted to take a couple-minute break. So, Robin, if you can stick with us, we'll be right back, and we're going to talk more about your books and more about some delicious food.
Okay.
Okay, we'll be right back.
Listening to the Progressive Radio Network, your number one source for progressive commentary.
Hello, I'm Carol Brier, host of Community Currency on Progressive Radio Network every Thursday, 5 to 6 p.m. Please join us as we connect people, ideas, important information, and discover solutions to some of the most urgent problems facing us every Thursday. 5 to 6 p.m., Community Currency on Progressive Radio Network.
I've been on radio for 37 years, every day, and I'm pleased that the Progressive Radio Network exists, because this is the one forum that brings together some of the most important, probing, creative, and dynamic minds on the planet. Join us each and every day, 24/7, on the Progressive Radio Network, your home for independent thinking.
Hello, I'm Mike Adams, the editor-in-chief and key writer of naturalnews.com and co-founder of the nonprofit site consumerwellness.org. I'll be starting a special segment on the Progressive Radio Network called The Health Ranger with Mike Adams. I'll be interviewing everyone from Dr. Jane Goodall to Suzanne Summers. Find out the latest in natural healing news and easy ways to live a healthier and more holistic lifestyle. So tune in on Saturdays at 6 p.m. Eastern every week on the Progressive Radio Network to hear The Health Ranger with Mike Adams.
Hi, you're listening to Bhavani, and I'd like to welcome you every Wednesday on the Progressive Radio Network to join me for my show called I Eat Green, where every Wednesday we will talk about eating healthy and eating sustainably for our planet. So join me every Wednesday from 5 to 6.
This is PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.
Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. And I am here with Robin Robertson, the author of 19 cookbooks and a food writer. You can find articles written by Robin in many of my favorite publications, like Veg News and Vegetarian Times Magazine. Robin, you said that I guess you kind of went cold turkey when you decided to go vegan.
Yeah, I sure did.
And so many people talk about how difficult it is to go give up certain things. And it was a while ago, so I'm not expecting you to remember exactly, but was it challenging?
Well, not really for me, because I was kind of prepared for, you know, just making sure I had a lot of really good foods in the house. I did some research and got some ingredients. And the thing that made it easy for me was I just kept picturing the animals. And I just kept thinking about the animals. And I kept thinking, you know, how selfish is it of me to feel like I have to have, oh, you know, whatever, a piece of cheese or, a hamburger or something, when what those animals have to suffer. You know, it just didn't make sense to me. And I was finally, actually, I felt a sense of relief And I was finally at peace with myself, like, you know, for the first time in my life, because I was like, well, this is what I want to do. This feels right, you know. And I found, you know, a whole world of vegetables. I always loved vegetables, but now I was able to finally, like, really get into them, you know. And so it was kind of like just relearning cooking a little bit, because I was trying to make the same flavors that we loved and just really rich-tasting, delicious foods, but using whole foods, whole ingredients, plant-based foods, and lots of great vegetables and grains. And it was a lot of fun learning how to make seitan and that kind of thing. Absolutely,
well,
a wonderful adventure.
For a chef, I'd imagine that it would be more of a challenge to introduce all of these things that you weren't used to using as the main event.
Exactly. Like, you know, we'd have a favorite dish we used to like. So, okay, well, let's see how I can make it with, you know, vegan ingredients. You know, whip up a seitan piccata instead of chicken or veal. I mean, it's easy.
That's easy to do.
It's so easy. It's just about, you know, just taking one ingredient and swapping it out for another in a lot of cases. It's like, you know, any of my family recipes, it was like easy. I just started veganizing everything, and then of course learning about new cuisines that I hadn't really tapped into much, that had a lot of naturally vegan things going on.
It's pretty well documented that we have very deeply ingrained associations with our food, and so you bring up thinking about how you didn't want to eat certain things because you realized where they came from and how cruel it was, and you were really not at peace with that. And I often recommend that to people, especially when they're having difficulties giving up cheese and dairy, because it's related to good times and comforting things and just good family experiences. And oftentimes we were rewarded when we did something good with an ice cream or a dairy treat or something.
Exactly.
And so if you can re-script it, and when you look at the dairy product, really see where it comes from, connect the dots, and kind of play, you have to make a choice, but play the tape that shows you where the dairy comes from, and it makes it, I think, a lot easier to stay away from it. And at some point, it's not going to look like an appealing food. It's going to look, what's the word I'm looking for? It's going to look like a food that, number one, is not health promoting. I look at dairy products and I just see like cancer all over them.
Yeah.
and just so much horror, because milk, one thing that people just don't seem to make the connection is we can't get a cow to give milk unless she's been pregnant and made a baby.
Yeah, I know.
And where those babies go to, a lot of them become veal calves. It's all connected, and it's not a pretty picture.
Sure, and the people that don't want to see that, they don't connect the dots. They're totally disconnected from that. And that is absolutely right. It's about making that connection and keeping that at the forefront.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how people are going to change, because I can't believe all the people out there that eat meat and dairy are innately cruel people. I mean, if a lot of them knew what was going on, if they could understand what it's all about rather than just taking it all for granted, I think a lot of people would make a change based on that.
So do you have any cheese-like recipes?
Yeah, sure. I have like a cheesy sauce that I use for nachos, and I really don't like to use them too much. I mean, I make a tofu feta kind of thing, and you know, it's not because I miss feta. It's because I like something with a nice kind of, lemony flavor to it, and that kind of thing. So I'm really trying to get away from a lot of that, you know. And like, for example, one of my favorite pizzas now, I'm just really kind of off all those fake cheeses.
Mm-hmm.
So, my favorite pizza now is my Tuscan white bean pizza, where I make like a puree white beans with some garlic and herbs and put that on a pizza and bake it. And it bakes into a very nice, rich, creamy, but, you know, protein-rich topping. And I put, you know, some basil on it and tomato slices and black olives and Kalamata olives. It's a wonderful pizza.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm not thinking, oh, I'm eating fake cheese. This doesn't taste like a real pizza.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't like fake cheese anyway. It doesn't make the pizza taste good. I'm just thinking, wow, this is a really, really delicious Tuscan-style pizza. It's an authentic recipe. It doesn't have anything fake on it. And it's very satisfying.
Good for you.
Yeah,
yeah. I don't like any of the fake cheeses, and I know that there are a few new ones that have come out that some folks in the vegan community have gone absolutely nuts over, and I'm still not convinced.
No,
but
I've tried them. I don't like them.
But, you know, I don't need cheese.
No.
And, you know, I haven't had cheese in decades. And,
yeah.
You know, once you get over the addiction.
Exactly.
And it is an addiction.
Exactly.
You discover the whole world of other wonderful foods out there. I love nuts, and we frequently make things from raw nuts that are either blended, and they can make a thick, cheesy,
yeah, sure,
sauce or cream or topping. And I don't know, I'm thinking that maybe somebody will come out with blocks of nut cheese.
Oh, sure. I think there are some already, but, you know, it's like, that's fine. That's
mm-hmm.
fine, too. You know, whatever. It's just, everybody's different, and they're all in their own place. And I think some people, if they're really hung up on cheese, then that's the journey they take. They go through the other fake cheeses or come up with a lot of cheesy things. But, I made a wonderful pasta with a kombucha sauce that was creamier than any Alfredo I ever had. But it was, you know, I wasn't saying, oh, this is like Alfredo sauce. Sure, it wasn't at all. It was its own thing, but
mm-hmm.
it was creamy
and
satisfying.
Good.
It had that mouthfeel. It was just so satisfying and delicious and way better for you.
Okay, so you have a couple of other books that came out this year that we haven't talked about, and I want to touch on them. So Party Vegan.
Yeah.
And I love this because, you know, I think vegans are great partiers.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
We're always looking for an opportunity to celebrate and celebrate with food.
Every day's a reason to celebrate.
Absolutely. So what can we find in this book?
Well, I've divided the book into anytime gatherings and holiday gatherings because, first of all, I don't want people to be intimidated and think it's only about if you're going to throw a big party because it's not. I have just recipes if you're just having people over for dinner, if you want to have a nice little picnic. I have a tapas table, a Chinese New Year menu, curry for company. It's a whole Indian menu. You know, a teen party, a child's birthday party, recipes to take to a potluck. And I actually have dinner menus from everything from a romantic Valentine dinner for two to also throwing a huge, like, wedding reception or family reunion and how to handle a big crowd. But in between there, I also have, like, a Super Bowl party, St. Patrick's Day, that kind of thing, Passover, Mother's Day, Father's Day, 4th of July, Halloween. My favorite was, you know, Halloween. I love to decorate with colors. So, I mean, the whole menu for the Halloween menu is orange and black food, everything. It's just so much fun. And this, I just had a lot of fun with this book. I like playing with my food, as I said on my blog, as you could see from those Thanksgiving things. So, I mean, I just really went a little bit crazy here with making up a lot of very fun menus. They're delicious, and they're designed to be, you know, interchangeable for, you know, pick one recipe off a menu and make it for a weeknight supper, or make the whole menu for a party, or just, you know, substitute something that you like to make. And, you know, I show all how to do that in the book about mix and matching menus. But the book is a lot of fun, and I took a lot of the tips I learned when I was a professional caterer to help make entertaining stress-free. So I give a lot of tips on how to throw all kind of parties. But it, like I said, it's also good for just having people over for a board game or something, you know, just some ideas, some, a lot of great appetizers and desserts.
Well, you listed a few recipes that are included in the book on your website, and excuse me, I'm noticing one of them is the chestnut bisque. And you mentioned the chestnuts that you used for Thanksgiving, too. What I love about this is I don't find people really use chestnuts very often in the United States. You know, we talk about chestnuts roasting on an open fire.
Yeah.
And you see some chestnuts pop up around the holidays. But such a wonderful food. And it has that just such a lovely, complex, satisfying flavor, and great, sweet or savory.
Mm-hmm.
So I really love that you use chestnuts and have them in your book.
Oh, well, that's an addiction of mine. I adore chestnuts. And I think the reasons people don't use them is because, like you say, they're only available most places a certain time of the year, and they're expensive, and they're a bit of a pain in the neck to peel and roast and get them all together. So what I've discovered, and one of the tips I give, and in fact, I even give this tip in Vegan Unplugged because of going to ethnic grocery stores, but the best place to find chestnuts is an Asian market.
Mm-hmm.
They sell them already peeled, and they sell them in shelf-stable bags for about 99 cents.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, I'll go to the grocery store, and there's like a jar of peeled chestnuts for $9.
Right. I just discovered this in an Asian store like a month ago.
Yeah, so I bought like 10 bags left. So I made chestnut bisque. I had chestnut in my stuffing. I mean, I could just eat chestnuts. Yeah, so I mean, it's just about telling people about how to get them and make it easy for them. And like with so many other great ingredients, it's like if people learn about it, then they'll start using them.
Yeah, I can't say enough about chestnuts. I lived in the south of France for 4 years, and the French certainly know what to do with chestnuts, and you can find them pretty easily in their supermarkets, and that's what I think that's how I got turned on to them, and then came back to the States, and wait, where are all those chestnuts?
Yeah.
Yum.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we're partying. And then the other book that you put out this year is Vegan on the Cheap, and I imagine that's really, really appealing to a lot of people.
Oh yeah, as it should be. I think one of the misnomers, people think, for some reason they think vegan,
it's so expensive.
Cooking is expensive. That's what they say. It's first thing out of their mouth. That's like, what's expensive about beans and rice?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think eating filet mignon and shrimp are expensive. You know, people really have to realize that. Sure, some of those prepared foods that you can buy, like the vegan sausages or, you know, prepackaged vegan seitan or even those cheeses and that kind of thing, they're expensive. And if you live on a lot of those processed packaged foods, that's going to run into a pretty high grocery bill. And, of course, we all know organic vegetables are pretty expensive, too. But, you know, I'd rather put my money into the organic vegetables and find ways to make the rest of it cheaper.
Well, I can't agree with you enough. It's so important to support the things that we believe in and to support the organic food industry and put the other crap out of business.
Sure,
Supply and demand will certainly help keep the cost down, and we want to be able to have food that is high in nutrients and isn't covered with toxic chemicals.
Or even just additives or processed in any way, because anytime anything's processed, it's that much nutrients that are removed. And so basically the premise in Vegan on the Cheap is make some of your own basics at home. A lot of the sauces, like when you can make your own peanut sauce, why buy bottled peanut sauce?
Mm.
Same thing
mm-hmm.
with just a chutney. I mean, chutneys, prepared chutneys, they're outrageously expensive, and they're so easy to make. Salad dressings, that kind of thing, hummus, homemade vegetable stock, that kind of thing. So I give a whole first chapter of very, very simple, basic recipes to keep on hand. And then all the recipes in the book cost 50 cents to $2 per serving, no more. So theoretically, I ran all the numbers on them, and it's a very economical food, but they're all very satisfying, homey kind of family-type recipes.
Now, I would imagine that especially in these difficult economic times, that would be something that's really important to people. And it's just so sad, you know, we've seen a number of documentaries that are starting to talk about the quality of our food, and they highlight, I think it was Food Inc., where they highlighted this one family that was exceptionally poor and talked about the food that they were eating, and oh gosh, it was scary. So they were eating like the dollar meals at McDonald's, and they were looking for food that was really inexpensive but was really making them sick.
Right.
And even getting those really inexpensive fast food meals, I have to believe that the meals that you're talking about are even less expensive.
Oh, yeah, sure, sure. Yeah, I mean, really, I mean, you know, beans and grains, what's cheaper than that? And then if you add some nice vegetables to it or, some, you know, make something with pasta, I mean, you can stretch grains and pastas and beans with some vegetables and feed an army, I mean, really.
You have another cookbook that you put out about some years now, the vegetarian slow cooker.
Oh, yeah.
And I just want to ask about that because I have yet to get into that scene. And I just don't know enough about it. And so do you do a lot of slow cooking?
Yes, I do. I find that so convenient and helpful. Because you really, even if you're in the house, I work out of my home, so it's not like I'm leaving the house all day, but whether you do or you don't, it's just so nice to put all your ingredients in one pot and know that a few hours later, dinner's going to be ready.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's really the basic value of it, but also I think certain foods really do taste better made that way. I love the way chili tastes made in the slow cooker. I'll make like a, you know, maybe a three bean chili or something, and it's just that slow cooking, gentle cooking is really nice. I make a seitan pot roast in my slow cooker. It's so good.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't take 8 or 9 hours. You know, most vegan food takes only 5 or 6 hours, but you can cook it on really low and put a timer on it if you're going to be gone all day. But, you know, the traditional slow cooker recipes were always for those tough cuts of meat and that kind of thing. But we don't have to worry about that. So, you know, but it's also terrific for cooking dried beans. If you want to just put on a pot of beans and let them go for 12 hours, you can,
right.
You know. But,
That's
yeah, I use my slow cooker a lot.
I guess somebody's going to have to buy me one to get me started, because that's just one area that I know nothing about when it comes to food, and I like to think that I know everything. Do you have any favorite utensils that you like to work with other than the chopping board and a knife? I mean, is there anything... like a mandolin is pretty exotic for most people, but I don't know. Are there?
Yeah, I like my mandolin. I love my Vitamix. That's incredible. I mean, that chestnut soup just was like a dream done in that. It was so, you know, creamy, smooth, silky. I also like, I have this cute little gadget that's a combination cherry pitter, olive pitter, which is very fun to use, because when fresh cherries are in season, I will just like get a whole pound of them, and when I get really good imported olives, sometimes I'll pit them real fast, you know, if I'm going to make like a puttanesca sauce.
Right, what does it look like?
It looks just like a, it's just this little stainless steel thing with two handles, and you just squeeze it together. You put the cherry in the end or the olive in the end, and it has like a little pointy thing that comes up through it, and then it goes flying out.
I got to get one of those.
Yes, look it up. You can Google it. You can see a picture of it somewhere. They're very nice. They're not very expensive, and they're fun.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, sometimes it's just a few simple items to have in the kitchen that make, I don't know, just make things fun and make things easier. And that goes back to what we were talking about earlier, how it's really important to think ahead and plan. And sometimes, you know, for people that work day in and day out, I know the day off is a time to chill and relax, but it's also a time to plan for the rest of the week and stock your cupboard with all those important things that you'll be using for the week, and organize your kitchen so that it's easy to work in.
Right. Yeah. If you can make one or two things, like on a Sunday afternoon or something, and you know, a big pot of stew or soup, or a big pot of chili, or maybe cook up a bunch of brown rice and then portion it and freeze it. You know, you can keep all your beans. Then it's a matter of just pulling things out and putting it together. Dinner can be on the table in 15 minutes.
I know. It's not that complicated to eat delicious and eat healthfully. So in addition to cranking out all these different cookbooks, you also do some teaching and lecturing?
Well, I haven't had time to do that in quite a while.
That's good to hear.
Yeah, really.
You can't do it all at once.
So, yeah, I'm pretty much concentrating on the writing now, and that takes up pretty much 24/7.
Are you working on another book?
Yes, I am.
Oh, my God, you just
Next fall will be Quick Fix Vegan.
Quick Fix Vegan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Oh, how is that different from Quick Fix Vegetarian?
Yes, it's kind of like a sequel. Even though Quick Fix Vegetarian is also 100% vegan, mm-hmm. this is just 150 more very quick and easy recipes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, people want those things. That's what they keep asking for, the quick and easy.
Exactly.
And, I'm looking at a few of the things that are in Quick Fix Vegetarian, and they look really interesting and creative, but I still think it gets back to the same thing where the first stop is to have a well-planned kitchen, and it doesn't even have to be a big kitchen.
No.
I've had a lot of fun cooking sometimes in very small spaces, like a hotel room that has, dare I say, a microwave. and no oven. You can still get pretty creative in one pot.
Oh, sure. That's what Vegan Unplugged is all about. It's amazingly creative in just one pot in 15 minutes. Like, amazing.
Okay, so we just have just a few more minutes. And are there any particular issues that are important to you with regard to food these days?
Well, my own personal kind of goal is to help make cooking vegan easier so that I can take away that excuse people have about, oh, it's too hard mm-hmm. to go vegan. Because my goal is literally a vegan planet. I mean, that's like my dream. And if I could just help more people go vegan, it helps them be healthier, and it helps save animals. And that's what my whole life is about, and that's what I'm dedicated to.
So I love that.
That's why I write these books. I just want to give people lots and lots of choices and lots of ways to go vegan.
Now, where you are in Virginia, is it a friendly community for what you're putting out?
No.
understanding of that area, it's.
A lot of hunters around here.
Do you have an opportunity to have lively discussions with them from time to time?
I tried to keep my mouth shut.
or cook for them. That's what I always like to do.
Yeah. No, I know. It is just not real vegan friendly around here. But, yeah, I do what I can when I can, when it's appropriate.
Mm-hmm. Do you live in the woods?
Yeah. Pretty much. Surrounded by woods and cornfields.
Right. And the food stores where you are, you said you had to drive an hour to get the Yuba or something.
The Yuba, yeah. They actually have a good amount of tofu and soy milk and almond milk and a few basics. So, you know, for the very basics, I'm fine here.
Mm-hmm.
But we do, we make our little pilgrimages about an hour, you know, maybe once or twice a week to get some of the other stuff.
Very good. Well, the point is that, you know, I live in New York City where I have access to everything.
Right.
And but even in places where you don't, it's not hard.
No, it's not.
Any place that has a market with fruits and vegetables, it doesn't have to be fancy. You don't even have to have some of the, you know, you don't have to have Yuba, for example.
No.
Just makes things fun. But, you know, the simplest fruits, vegetables, whole grains, legumes, nuts and seeds, you can whip up amazing, amazing dishes. Any one of these 19 cookbooks that Robin Robertson has lovingly put out to the world, I'm sure could handle, could be accommodated by what's in any standard supermarket.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, Robin, thank you so much. I had no idea that you had put out so many books, and I'm just blown away. So keep doing it, and I look forward to Quick Fix Vegan.
Thank you.
And all the other good things that are going to come out.
Oh, well, I appreciate it. Great talking to you, Karen.
Thank you. So check out these websites, veganplanet.blogspot.com and globalvegankitchen.com. And get ready for the holidays with some of these great recipes. Thank you so much. You've been listening to me. I'm Karen Hartglass. You've been listening to It's All About Food. And next week we will have David Burton, and we'll be talking about his film Ingredients. So I'm looking forward to that. Have a delicious week. Bye-bye.